Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Joining me right now is Rabbi Michael Katz. He's a director of Chabad House and a rabbi at Chabad of Ilovo. And good morning, Rabbi Katz.
Good morning to you, Kathy, and good morning to all the listeners.
Rabbi, why are we fasting today?
Today we're fasting for a period of time, actually, that is termed by the sages in the Talmud as being 3 days of darkness. So I'm not sure if it was preempting Eskom's load shedding, but it was stage three, actually, of darkness in those times. There were three dates, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th of Tevet. So we're now on the 10th, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th, where there was an accumulation, as there often is with these calamitous dates, an accumulation of different events, different things that happened that created these three difficult days. And today is kind of the culmination of them and the worst of them all, which was the day on which Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to Jerusalem. Now, remember, the Jewish people got the inheritance of Israel under Joshua when we came out of the desert, came out of Egypt, and for 850 years, quite a long time, that we lived in Israel, for better or for worse, and there was no actual temple until Solomon built the temple after 450 years, and the temple stood for 400 years, 410 years, and then Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to Jerusalem, and eventually, 3 years later, destroyed the temple on Tisha B'Av. So this was the beginning of the siege that eventually drove the Jewish people out of Israel for the very first time.
So basically, we start observing Tisha B'Av now.
Like correct. It's something in our consciousness. This was the precursor to all the exiles that followed thereafter. So this is the beginning. It started on the 10th of Tevis. On the 8th and the 9th, there were things that happened later on in history.
Right.
Just to mention them briefly, on the 8th of Tevis was the day on which King Ptolemy, in his rule, which was under the Greeks, the Persians eventually became the Greeks. The Greeks dominated Israel at that time, and this King Ptolemy of Greece ordered the translation of the Torah into Greek. He took 72 sages, he put them into private rooms with sinister intentions, obviously, asked them to translate the Torah into Greek. A miracle happened, and it was all translated exactly the same, but the sages realized that they had locked the Torah into one translation, into one interpretation, instead of all the interpretations that it's supposed to have. And they said this could lead to calamities. They came out of their solitary confinement with their translations on the 8th of Tevis. And then the 9th of Tevis was Ezra and Nehemiah, the two great sages who led the Jewish people back into Israel at the time of the Second Temple. They died on the 9th of Tevis. So we've got the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. But then building up to this idea of exile that the 10th of Tevis actually brought upon us.
So interesting. I mean, just getting back to the translating of the Torah into Greek, how many, yes, you say that, you know, the calamities that then it was fixed into one interpretation. How many interpretations are there of the Torah?
Well, we're told 70. You know, the Torah can be interpreted in so many different ways.
Mm.
And it's one of the beauties of it. You know, you miss out if you translate a word. I don't know, well, one of the most famous ones, I suppose, is the very first one that everybody knows, the word Bereshit. What does the word Bereshit mean? It's got the word Rosh in it. It's got the idea of the head of everything. It's got the idea of a Bet right at the beginning, the letter Bet, the second letter of the Torah, which is, we understand, God's thought of creating the world, and then the Torah was there. He wanted a people to keep it. There were two kind of coupled intention of the creation. And you just put that and you say, in the beginning, you lose all of that. You lose the nuance. You lose the analogies of Torah. You lose the depth of it all by translating it. And they realized that while they were forced to do this, and the miracle happened, it was all identical, but it locked it into one thing, and we lost sort of 69 other layers, if you wish.
Yeah, and I suppose the same thing has happened with the Tanakh. You know, when you teach the laws on damages, one learns about, you know, a boring ox, you know, instead of in terms, which in terms that we would use today, which is really how it was intended. So on the one hand, you've got it preserved, and on the other, things get lost in translation.
Absolutely. Things get lost in translation. Now, if we just think about, you know, one of the big things that sort of runs behind some of the interpretations of Christianity, for instance, come from translations of Hebrew words which are dubious in their translation. Big concepts behind parts of Christianity, which came back to haunt us later on, were because of the way that the words were translated into Greek and then eventually into other languages, and you go down a completely different path, you get a completely different interpretation to what the original actually was meant to be.
Yeah. Who was Ezra the scribe?
Ezra the scribe was this great sage who, post-Babylon, he was responsible for the Jewish people actually coming back into Israel and reintegrating. You got to remember we kind of underestimate it. We don't think about it, I suppose, enough. But when the Jewish people were exiled from Israel the first time, they went off into Babylon. There was huge intermarriage. There was huge, assimilation. Everything became watered down. There were those who remained behind. There were those who went to Babylon. It was a very, very troublesome time. And his job was kind of bringing the people back. He came back to Israel and he brought about a Baal Tshuva movement. Mm. And in Israel at the time, that was Ezra the scribe, great sage, and unfortunately passed away. And Yahrzeit is the ninth, which was yesterday, the ninth of Tavis.
Is it a major fast or a minor fast, even though it's a half day fast?
Well, it's not really a half day fast. It's a morning to night fast. So the fast began this morning in Joburg at 4 o'clock. If you got up to eat, you had to do it before 4 o'clock. And then it ends at 7:22 this evening in Joburg. It'll be a bit later if you're on holiday in Cape Town or Plett or wherever you are. Most of the fasts are day only fasts. If we think about it, all of these ones that are for the temple, Fast of Esther, Tzom Gedalia and so on, Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur are the only exceptions. Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur or 25 hour fasts, more than 24 hours actually. And we don't like to term them major or minor. They're all major. They are important fasts. And the idea of a fast always is to bring about the feeling of tshuva. A fast is always the idea of bringing about a feeling of returning to where we should be. We've got to remember that nothing happens in this world without us, men, human beings, Jews, having a part to play in it. There's something that went wrong in times of old, and we want to make sure that we correct. We want to make sure that our behaviors don't lead to, God forbid, any other calamities, but rather that they lead to success, that they lead to gula, that they lead to redemption. And the fast, therefore, is supposed to conjure up within ourselves this idea of a complete dependence on God, a complete understanding that everything is min hashamayim, everything is from heaven, but that we can affect negatively, God forbid, which happened in the past and caused these calamities. We can affect positively by turning it all around and making sure that our behavior is correct going forward and bring about the redemption.
Amazing. And finally, just before we get to headlines, why is a fast called a fast when it goes so slow? Okay, all right.
Probably because if you're doing the right things, it will be fast.
If hungry is the only thing you're left with, you're doing it wrong. I got it. Thank you, Rabbi Katz.